And Frank Lewis, my father was just Frank.
Uh-huh. When did you kind of start going around with your father, or sort of caring about
his? Well, actually I grew up in the business. I remember the Mendoza family, I think is as early as about, it was either 1936 or 1937. Working in one of our theaters, it was the California Theater, which still exists on 8th and Main Streets.
How old were you then, roughly?
Oh, I guess I must have been about 10 years old or something like that.
And do you remember?
Oh, yeah, sure.
What sort of impressed you about them? How come you remember about them?
Well, first of all, because even then she was, within our medium, a huge star. Okay. And the music that they played was very different than what I had grown up with around here. And it was kind of strange because the music was very Texas, very border in flavor, Tex-Mex or Norteño, whatever you want. But we didn't have many of those people out here in California. Hey, our people primarily came from the west coast of Mexico on up, and it hit nonetheless. I think, of course, Mal Hombre had to be a success because it was a tango, and it was a Mexicanization of a tango. The instruments that they played were very unique. I think Lydia and one of the others played 12-string guitars, and I'm trying to remember. I think her mother played a mandolin. I seem to recall her mother playing a mandolin. Perhaps the
actually the mother played guitar too.
Did she also?
It was one of the daughters that played the mandolin. I think Maria or.
Well, according to this picture, it was Maria. But I.
You don't think that.
Of course, in this shot, we have the mother with the six-string guitar, Maria with a mandolin.
This is on the back. Well, I'm not really sure whether I identified them correctly, whether this is actually Maria, and because I think that is Lydia with the mandolin.
With the mandolin, yeah.
And I think that was Maria there on the side.
Probably so.
Anyway, that's the picture on the back of 9023, which I think I mislabeled as to who they are.
But that's the brother, yeah.
As a young boy, can you recall any of your sort of emotions about hearing this sort of music? That was, did you consider it very country, sort of hick-like, or?
Oh, definitely. Uh-huh. Oh, no question. Unlike some of the things we get today, quite authentic. Mm-hmm. You know, now everything is doctored up. People sort of. Well, even in the American country and Western scene, it's pretty manufactured, much of it. Not all of it, obviously. I was just amazed because they, unlike today with everyone moving around on stage and so forth, they would be seated. It was a very static number. They would sit down. They wouldn't look like that when they were working. Most of the time, they'd be seated. Well, here they're not in costume. This is probably a recording session, but they'd actually be in costume, but seated before microphones. And they'd just sit, and that was it. I mean, you'd see four or five of them seated out there and singing. Huh. Of course, obviously, it's always much more pleasant and more convenient to play guitar or any of those sorts of instruments. Requiring two hands to play them sitting down.
Can you recall anything that your father said about them especially, or that he kind of, why did he hire them, or?
Well, they were a big star act. I mean, they were. It was one of our first stars.
Could you possibly think of how their show went? Can you remember that? I was more talking about how the actual program proceeded.
Well, I think we saw the whole family out there singing together, And then what would happen, the sisters would come on, then the brother would come on, and then I think Lydia would close the show. Now, that's as best as I can remember. Perhaps Mr. Cortez, since he was an adult already at the time, would have a better memory than I.
How did you advertise these shows at that time? Was there radio or press? Or
we had, of course, a Spanish daily paper, which still exists, La Opinión. And we had some radio programs on KMTR, for instance. There was Tony Sane, and there was David Orozco, there was Ramon Arnaiz. These were probably, there was Rodolfo Salinas, whose wife succeeded him when he passed away, Elena Salinas. Now, these were probably the four most popular programs. There was not one station, however, other than perhaps one that reached up from Tijuana. They were really at KMTR, which is now KLAC. And in fact, we had a booth on stage, and we had an early morning radio show from the stage at the California Theater every morning. I think it went from 6 to 8 o'clock.
Sometimes include the stars who would get the night shows?
It would. Uh-huh. And not only that, it was usually live.
Right.
And the stars who grew up here locally and then went on to Mexico started here. Adelina Garcia, the Padilla sisters, who were not only the Padilla sisters, Margarita went on to become a soloist, some renown, and her sister Maria, who lives here, married Memo Quintero, went on to become El Dueto Azteca, Maria y Memo. They were a huge act.
This was during the late 30s,
period. This is late 30s, until about 1940.
And what sort of audience would come? Would it be different than your usual? Or?
Yes, because first of all, it was free. I mean, anyone could just walk in off the street, and unfortunately, most of the people were working. It wasn't really an hour when you drew huge crowds. You really didn't. But there were always a few dozen people around watching the show. And in those days, the radio programs not only sold advertising, but they also sold requests. And I think somebody would pay 25 cents for a request. Well, this is a request by Juanito for Maria or something like that. And they'd pay a quarter or whatever it was at the time. I remember that very well. Incidentally, you might want to call Maria from Maria y Memo. You might want to call her. Because she also has, I'm sure, very vivid memories of those times.
Of this period,
Yeah.
On the nights when the Mendoza family was here, would they be the only performers, or would they have other
performers? No, there would be other acts on the bill. They would probably take up an hour. You probably had another couple of acts on there to go to, say, an hour and a half. We usually shot for an hour and a half. And after that, Lydia worked at some of our other theaters. She worked at the old Mason Opera House, which we owned up here on Broadway. The Mayan Theater on South Hill. And, of course, here at the Million Dollar.
And then during the war, they didn't really come here. It was after the war?
No, they... I don't remember specifically. I was away for part of the time myself. I'm trying to remember. It seems to me, yes, my dad had stage shows during the war. He had them primarily at the Mason Opera House.
Which one was bigger?
The Million Dollar is bigger. The Mason Opera House was not as big as California, except that the Mason Opera House was much better equipped. The California was built as a cinema, so it didn't have the stage facilities or the dressing room facilities the Mason Opera House had.
Why did they bring the Mendoza show to the Million Dollar?
Afterward?
Yeah.
Well, it came to the Million Dollar because that's where we ran our stage shows. For a while, we ran them in the Mayan. We acquired the Mayan in 49, the $1 million in 50. We tore down, or the state of California tore down the Mason Opera House in, I think it was 51, and built the state building up here between 1st and 2nd on Broadway. But capacity has to be a consideration when you're when you're doing stage shows.
And how did the Mendoza family draw when you had them? Did they?
They
can you
didn't.
Recall?
Well, they didn't draw badly. Now, by that time, we didn't bring the family out too much.
Okay, this
by
was after time, the Second War. After
yeah,
War
it was War mostly II. Lydia. I'm trying to think back. We may have brought the sisters out, but I think the mother had either retired or passed away by that time. And I don't really remember the brother afterward. He may have been there, but I don't place him. See, I used to run, as many as 15 stage shows a year. You know, well, after a number of years, everything starts to jumble together, unfortunately.
But can you recall any specific instances that you remember of how people reacted or how you reacted to them, by any chance?
Well, they reacted very well. She always had a public. The only thing is she wasn't any longer, to use today's vernacular, a superstar. Okay? She had come down, I would say she had dropped two notches in stature to the point where she was a co-star or featured player, as they would say in motion pictures. Because, of course, tastes change, the public that came into the area changed. We've had some Norteño migration, but even Norteño music has changed tremendously from the true thing that Lydia used to sing. I think it's been adulterated to some extent. In fact, I can't stand it anymore.
But back in the late 30s, you feel she was a real superstar.
No question. Without a doubt. Uh-huh. At least in this city. I can't speak for every situation. Uh-huh.
Can you give me any figures by any chance as to how much it cost to go to the theater, for example, at that time, and what sort of a gross would they make or anything?
It seems to me that in those days, we were probably charging, I'm talking about night or weekend price now, we were probably charging 25 cents. Maybe as much as 50 cents on certain attractions. No more than that. When I was running the theater, I always tried to charge the least that I could charge rather than the most. Today, the impresarios in Spanish, the dances and the big shows and so forth, they, you know, $10 is nothing. That's rule of thumb. Well, I never believed in that. I wanted as many people as possible to be able to come. I wanted to keep my theater hot for during the weeks when I didn't have a stage show. So our goals were quite different. Of course, I've been out of it now for 9 years.
You don't do stage shows anymore?
Well, I have the theater leased out to Metropolitan Theaters.
Oh, you lease it?
They
out.
Still do to stage shows, but I don't.
I'm
now
a landlord. I don't blame you. Best have been. Can you give me any of the changes that have happened in this business? You know, I know that there's very little
from stage. When to when?
From, let's say, when you were a boy in the late 30s.
Well, I would say that the market was very limited in those days. There probably weren't more than 7 or 8 theaters in the entire area running Spanish. Today there must be 30, 40. We didn't have, there were two problems. First of all, there wasn't product available. There weren't huge stables of recording stars available on records. There were only part-time radio stations. We simply didn't have the people here then either. Now you're looking at 3 million Hispanics, I would say, of which 2 million principally have Spanish as their main language. In those days, we probably had 750,000, of which 2/3 spoke as much English or more English. You probably had, we were drawing from really a limited public of 250,000, so the market's increased in geometric proportion.
And you say there weren't really very many big names as far as...
There weren't, stars. Because Mexican movies, I recall distinctly, I think they were only producing about 15 a year, and during World War II, they kicked up the schedule to approximately 100 a year.
And it was mainly movies who publicized stars?
Well, we did both, you see. But the recording industry in Mexico, as it was up here, was very limited. I think there were something like 3 major labels or 4 major labels. There were no independents. And you'll recall up here in English, we had no independents. I remember about the time of the war, Capitol became suddenly an additional label beside what? RCA, OK, Columbia. Brunswick, but 2 of them were captive labels of the others, you know, and then suddenly Capitol started, then Mercury, and but there, nobody released a record independently. Couldn't get the airplay, they couldn't get the distribution in the stores, didn't exist.
And also, were there really any, as far as I can tell, there weren't, except for the Hermanas Padillas when they came along, no really homegrown Spanish language stars.
Adelina Garcia was the other one.
Who was it?
Adelina Garcia.
She came here from Los Angeles?
She's from Los Angeles. She went to Mexico. We had another local act called Chicho y Chencho, Los Despertadores. But they didn't do anything in Mexico, really. They were strictly local.
But they did well here at the
theater. They did well locally.
Were they known as Los Madrugadores?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, they were the second. Uh-huh.
Yeah, because they were on one of the radio shows.
Mm-hmm.
It was General Arnaiz's show, but Mr. Orozco was the disc jockey, or the MC, if you will.
Why do you think that is, that there's so little of music from here that has made an impact in Spanish language?
Probably, again, because of the recording companies. See, if you record it up here, you probably still record it for RCA or somebody. The markets were all limited. Good grief. I remember going to Mexico, I think around 1940 or so, the first time. Mexico City was a city of, 2.5 million people, and the country had 20 million people. We'll look at it today.
Yeah.
It's 15 million and 80 million. It's just, there's much more material, there's more market, there's more creative talent. I think in part it was that. There was a Cuba in those days also exporting music. Now there isn't. Cuba stayed in 1959. I think the only artists of note to come out of Cuba since Castro are Irakere. Other than that, there's nobody. Everyone else was created prior to that time. And you listen to Radio Havana on any short wave, and it's time warp. So in those days, one of the principal industries for export in Cuba was music. Records. It was a huge supplier of music. So the centers, really, believe it or not, were New York, Havana, Mexico City. That was about it. Spain, of course, had already been in the throes of the Civil War. That was out. Argentina, their music was so different and so strange. The places like Panama and Caracas were very much in the Havana orbit. And San Juan really didn't pick up too much until after Havana declined.
Did you ever know Mr. Calderon or whoever it was who ran that record shop?
Yes, of course. Yes, Mauricio Calderon, yes.
Uh-huh. Do you know by any chance what became of him, or since they closed the shop?
Well, no, he passed away, of course. I think I think even his sons had passed away. You might want to speak with his nephew, Gustavo Acosta, however.
Gustavo Costa.
Acosta. Yes. He worked for his uncle, and his father, Dionisio Acosta, I think was head of A&R for Columbia Records in New York. So you might want to speak with him. He runs Mexcinema, one of the Mexican motion picture distributing companies on West 3rd Street.
Oh, really? Uh-huh.
And he worked for his uncle, and he's quite knowledgeable.
Because I was wondering what the... did you ever have any sort of ties in promotion with them? Because they seem to be the main outlet for phonograph records of Spanish language at the time.
They were. They faded away. Meiberg became the distributor for, it's either Meiberg or Meyerberg, I forget which, became the distributor for RCA. And it just, other people started opening record shops also. I think that had something to do with it. The Plaza area sort of broke up because now Broadway and Whittier Boulevard are the equivalent of what the Plaza was in those days. Main Street and the Plaza area, that was the heavy retail for Spanish speaking.
Although your father started this business, but you obviously must have liked the music, otherwise you probably wouldn't have stayed in this, or was it mainly a business for you, or did you?
No. I liked it very much. Uh-huh. I, in fact, at one time was in the record business. I distributed Peerless Records, which is one of the Mexican major labels. Uh-huh. I guess about, for a period of about 3 or 4 years, I think, from about, perhaps, 57 to 62. Right in through there. So I'm quite familiar with it.
Who were some of your favorite artists, if I may ask? If you think back over the...
How far back?
Oh, as far back as you can remember.
Gee, that's so hard to say.
Yeah.
That's really hard to say. I'd hate to say. I wouldn't want to leave anyone out. wouldn't want to leave anyone out.
You didn't have any particular favorites when you were a boy?
Oh, I did. I did. But I wouldn't want to.
You don't want to?
No, I'd hate to say.
About anyone out.
We had another local girl, by the way. I think she's still around. She was called La Prieta Caldera. I think you can probably find her someplace. I'm not sure where. Mm-hmm. But she was one of our early stars here locally. There were others. There were early groups up from Mexico. You may have heard of the famous trio Garnica Sencio. They worked up here, but I'm talking about the 20s. This was even before my time, but I'm sure that...
Did you hear your father talk about
it? Oh, yes, and Gus Acosta can certainly fill you in on those. Gus is probably, I don't know, I'm 56. I'm sure Gus is probably more around 68. He can certainly tell you,
You think he lives here in...
Well, he lives in Sun City, down near Hemet, but he comes in 2 or 3 days a week to the office out here on West 3rd, and if not, you can certainly... Usually he's here midweek.
You don't have any kind of anecdotes about the Mendozas in particular?
I don't, unfortunately. I really don't.
Have you ever seen any photos that your father had in his files of any of them, or Lydia or the sisters by any chance?
Let's go look in the files.
Could we? Oh, that would be wonderful.
That's all gone.
May I just ask, what is your background, sort of ethnically?
We're Spaniards, yes.
Ah, you spoke Spanish.
Yes. My dad, although born in Honolulu, was raised here. My mother, born in Chicago, was raised here. Her mother died, and so, she was passed around from aunt to cousin and so forth. Then, finally, her father decided to bring her out here, and I think she must have been somewhere around 8 years old when she came out. Mm-hmm. My father came over from Hawaii when he was about 3. So they were both essentially raised here, although they weren't born here. Uh-huh. They were raised here.
But you grew up in a Spanish-speaking home? And
oh, absolutely. Uh-huh. In fact, as an example, I spent a great deal of time with my father's mother, and she never really learned English. I mean, you spoke Spanish or you didn't eat. Uh-huh. And that was it. My name is Jose in Spanish. Okay. It's from the region above Portugal. And in the Gallego language, as well as in Portuguese, since essentially it's a dialect of Portuguese rather than being a dialect of Castilian, Fosse would be the same as os in Castilian, sickle. So it's a Spanish name, but it doesn't sound like
there, was one aspect of Hispanic music at that time that always intrigued us, like somebody like Pilar Arcos, for example. Do you remember that sort of genre of the people that sort of operatic type voices?
Well, yeah, but she was a bigger star internationally than she was locally. Okay, I mean, she worked occasionally for my dad and so forth, but...
Could this have been before your time, you know, because...
Oh, in fact, yes. I mean, she was considerably older than Lydia and so forth.
Sure. That type of...
In fact, much of her career was spent as an actress, and much of her career was spent traveling and so forth. I mean, because she obviously was big in Spain and in Latin America, but this was a more international type of a Spanish song. Her brother Guillermo was a guitarist used to work for us on occasion also. Guillermo Arcos.
Was there any feeling here, or did you sense it, of the sort of distinction between rural type music like the Mendozas, you know, sort of country type music, and the more city or, what shall we say, upper class type of music?
Oh, absolutely.
Would you make such a distinction?
Yeah. Yes, definitely, because first of all, you had dances and nightclubs working here constantly. Well, they all basically worked in the so-called tropical music, okay, and romantic, the Agustin Laras, the you know, all the Mexican modern composers, because frankly, what Lydia did didn't really survive the bars and the shows out in the countryside. I mean, it's like, you know, like Mickey Gillies in Dallas today, or I'm sorry, in Houston, outside of Houston today. It's a different thing.
Well, Spanish entertainment business certainly had been around for a good while, but as far as the rural element in it, do you think that was something almost started with the Mendozas or something?
Well, I think in a large sense it did, because you had the Mendozas and certain other groups like the Garnica Asensio and others prior to the time that you had mariachis. Okay, you really didn't have mariachis until Lucha Reyes. Okay, Lucha Reyes, I think, started about the late 30s, but it really didn't catch on until about the time of her death. Okay, you had no mariachi bands. Okay, everything was a trio or self-accompanied or so forth. So the next big scoop or step up, excuse me, was probably Jorge Negrete. Because prior to that, well, you had the Trio Calaveras, you had the Trio Tariacuri, you had all of these other trios. And they either played Veracruz style, or it was three guitars that played romantic and some ranchero and so forth. But you didn't have mariachis as we have them today. That was, first there was the mariachi, then there was the modernization of the mariachi, as exemplified by the Vargas around 1947, 1948, when Rubén Fuentes took over as musical director of the Mariachi Vargas. And then you had the second modernization about 5 or 6 years ago when Jose Martinez took over as musical director of the Vargas. But we had no mariachis in those. There was no such thing as a mariachi. I never saw a mariachi until, you'd hear them occasionally, squeakily playing a background for Lucha Reyes record on RCA. Terrible. they couldn't compete with the trios musically. Yeah. They couldn't. They were self-taught and they were awful. So Rubén Fuentes changed that around.
Ask one question: which group had the most influence,
Marichi Chapala or the breakoff group from Marichi Vargas, the Toto Nilco? No, what's the name? The Memo Quintero was in it.
Oh, that was a Mexico.
No, not Marichi Mexico. Marichi Hijos de Toto Nilco. Am I saying it right? Charles de Toto Nilco.
I don't remember that one. Because I remember Memo when he was with Mariachi Mexico de Pepe Villa. That was the next big breakoff. But see, it existed. Mariachi Mexico existed in the late 40s. Okay? But Pepe Villa broke off and formed it about the same time that Rubén went into the Vargas. Mm-hmm. Now, I would have to give him the credit, because everyone else was beneath them, way beneath, mm-hmm. way beneath. I would say those two mariachis from about 1947, and certainly they were there was obviously progress between, say, 41, when Jorge Negrete recorded Ay Jalisco No Te Rajes, but he didn't record it with a mariachi. He recorded it with a studio orchestra with Maestro, what was his name? Esperon, Manuel Esperon, directing the studio orchestra. Well, that was really, that's what turned the mariachi around. He did. Okay, but people.
Esperon or Villa?
No.
Villa.
Esperon.
Esperon. Mm-hmm.
Because Esperon was doing studio arrangements, which were later downplayed to 8, 10, or 12 pieces by the mariachis, particularly 12 in the case of the Vargas and the Mexico. Okay, and that was it. I mean, all the rest, I mean, these others that you mentioned, yeah, good mariachis, they came, they went, but they didn't last. You know, for instance, when Boni Collazo, who was the arranger for the Mexico, he broke off and formed his own mariachi.
Which was?
I think Mariachi Estrella. Mm-hmm. But he did mostly studio work. In fact, I don't remember him going out and accompanying anyone. Some of these mariachis were strictly figments of someone's imagination. They weren't anything but studio groups that were assembled.
I would like to just hark back once more to Lydia, because it seems like most of the entertainers, like you were speaking about the development of the commercial mariachi, so that was all part of the film industry, wasn't it, that publicized these things, or somebody had money behind it, wasn't it?
No, it was RCA, but really, with Lucha Reyes. RCA with Lucha Reyes during the late 30s.
Oh, really? There was also the record. Because wasn't it with
definitely.
Lydia, who was not in any movies, how did she get publicized? How did
records. Oh,
was
sure,
it,
but
it
she had
the records,
major labels, no question. Uh-huh. But practically the only one that was boosted by the mariachi as bad as they were was Lucha Reyes. In fact, she was in a class by herself. She had no male counterpart. I mean, she was here and that was it. I mean, these other little girls, the Hermanas Padilla and so forth, but they'd have some sort of group background. They played guitars themselves.
Yeah. Oh, but Lucha Reyes appeared here just without...
Lucha appeared here. I think we had her, we brought her mariachi. I think the first time the Vargas came with her, but it wasn't the Vargas of 47 or 48. This was before Rubén Fuentes. Mm-hmm. Besides, I think in those days we probably had Lucha once. I mean, she had a terrible drinking problem. You either put a keeper with them or you stay away from them. You don't hire them. They leave you flat once, and you just avoid them like the plague. It's unfortunate.
Do you have any anecdotes about the Lydia or her?
I really don't, because they're fairly normal people.
Yeah.
You know, and as a matter of course, you just pros, good musicians. Uh-huh. They would show up. They mind their own business. They're nice people. And it's the old adage, of course, of the squeaky wheel getting the oil, isn't it? It really is.
Were you in connection with any of the other theaters that did shows like yours here, like in Fresno or up in Northern California?
Not really in those days. The only time that we were is when Mr. Cortez or others would bring a road show through. Okay, we'd book it, then he'd go on and sell it to Tony Bo up in Fresno, or to Art Tirado in San Bernardino, or to Blanco and Martin Circuit. And of course they do a lot of auditoriums and a lot of dances, which weren't done around here, really, not in the Los Angeles area.
But I mean, did you depend on some promoter like Mr. Cortez?
Or
how did you get in touch with your artists?
No, we'd get in touch with them directly.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, or through agents in Mexico, because we would do both. We would buy both from a promoter going through with a roadshow, or we would arrange our shows directly. But remember, really, we subsisted until about 1940 mostly with local talent. With local talent.
What do you mean by local? From here or from the United States?
No, from here.
From here.
From Los Angeles. The Prieta Calderas and the Lina Garcias and the Hermanas Padilla. The Hermanas Padilla even had two other sisters who formed in a duet, two of their other sisters, and they were known as Las Tapatillas. So there were really two sets of Hermanas Padillas, but only one were known as the Hermanas Padilla. Sure. And others, there were lots of local artists, there were local singers, there were people who migrated from Mexico. There was Manuel Maitorena from Sonora, and he built his career here. There were others. There were others that there was a local group of artists and singers and so forth who we used constantly. Mm-hmm. Now they don't do that at all. I mean, I think now if you want to be known, you have to go to Mexico. If you're from here, you go to Mexico to become known. Kind of doing things backward. But we used to be the farm system in those days. We our best acts we sent to Mexico.
That's very interesting.
But even so, you had from San Antonio. You of course had Eva Garza, who went on to be a big star in Mexico. And she was a pocha, but she wasn't considered as such. I don't think that most of the people in Mexico realized that she was from here.
Did Chelo Silva ever come out here to play?
Chelo Silva often. In fact, she was here 2 weeks ago.
Oh, really?
Oh, sure. She was working one of the nightclubs around town.
Yeah, she's really doing an amazing... I heard her over a radio show in San Antonio.
Yeah.
She's an amazing way with the audience.
She's incredible.
Yeah. Her voice is shot, but it's...
But it always was.
I mean...
You know, when you have no voice to start with, there's not much to lose.
But she sure knows how to make
it. It's all delivery.
Yeah.
All delivery. Yeah. It reminds me somewhat of some of the French blues singers of two generations back. I don't even remember some of their names, but you'd listen to them, and even some of the men. I don't know if you remember Jean Sablon. Do you remember him?
Uh-huh.
He'd talk a record. He never did sing. Well, this is sort of the equivalent in Mexican.
Chelo
Silva. Well, but an example of another Texas artist. So it's three that we've mentioned now, Lydia and Chelo and Eva Garza.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been others.
Yeah.
There have been others. Of course, in the Norteño field, I mean, the whole valley, they're interchangeable, one side of the border from the other. Plenty of them. You know, there's stars on the Mexican side and stars over here, and vice versa. Go back and forth.
Yeah, when did you first have Los Alegres de Terán? You remember how far?
Oh, God. I don't. It's been... must be 30 years, I would think.
Uh-huh.
has to be 30 years or practically.
Probably in the early 50s when they...
Yeah, sure, must be.
And did they draw well here too?
Yes. Yes. But you see, suddenly, it became respectable after a while.
But did it have to do with migration patterns? Because when you first started,
in a sense, it did. That's true.
They began migrating westward.
That's true. But also, the music got a little better. And strangely, I think one of the people responsible for that was Piporro, who popularized it in comedy. Okay, such a great comedian, and he wrote much of his own material. He did some of these songs with the Norteño background. That he had much to do with the popularization of the Norteño school.
One more thing, Lydia mentioned that she worked with a well-known comedian here at your theater, Tintan.
Tintan. Yeah.
Do you remember anything about that particular show? You know, that's probably hard to think of.
I don't.
But he was a big star. Big star movies,
stage. Made some phonograph records. Unfortunately, he never recorded enough. In fact, I tried to sign him, and it never worked. We just never got together.
Did he sing as well as make jokes?
Comedy. Uh-huh. Yeah, he sang some songs. He had a big version of El Burrito going back to about 1946, 47, which was a novelty song at the time. It was very number one. A huge version of it for those times.
He started off as a janitor at a Juarez radio station.
A guitar like nobody.
Oh, yeah?
Oh. No, I mean, it's very difficult. It's very difficult. You think, well, all you have to do is double fret. Oh, no. Uh-huh. It's nothing like it. It's amazing.
She told me that some shows, some theaters in Mexico City try to have her, you know, be accompanied by an orchestra and all that. But then, did you ever try anything like that, or did you just let her be with her guitar?
Never.
Uh-huh.
It wouldn't work.
It wouldn't work. Exactly.
Do you think? It wouldn't work.
Sisters too, wasn't
it? Not at all.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember. Oh, my God. Yeah. I must be getting old. It's a long time ago.
Yeah, they're still down.
The Mendoza sisters.